Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
America's team. And the reason I want to do that, there is so much buzz right now around the Cleveland Browns. It's hard not to get a little punch drunk on these guys. I mean, there isn't just talk about the postseason. There's not just talk about the playoffs. There's talk about the Super Bowl. And it's not sarcastic, and it's not ironic. That's how good America's team is. Folks everywhere are riding with the Browns, and they're looking to jump on an already overcrowded bandwagon. Well, everybody not named Duke Johnson, because after skipping workouts last month, the Browns running back was at minicamp yesterday, but does not necessarily mean that that's where he wants to be. He's not sure he wants to be there because he's not sure they want him there.
Nothing has changed. This is the only difference between last week and this week is this is mandatory, and I'm here.
All right, so the only difference between last week and this week is it's mandatory and I'm here. In other words, to quote a famous poet, I'm here so I won't get fined. He doesn't want to get fined, but he's also not exactly sure about his future in Cleveland. He's made that pretty clear for a while now. And then he backed up and he underlined it once again yesterday.
I only want to be someone I want to. I think at the end of the day, that's all this is about, is being someone you're wanted. In the moment, you're not wanted anymore. Well, in my case, the moment I'm not wanted anymore, I think it's best that, you know, we find a middle ground and we do what's best for the team. If you don't want me here, there's no need to keep me or force me to be here if you don't want me here.
All right, so obviously that doesn't sound so great. I'm not saying you've got, like, an Antonio Brown-style showdown coming, because while he is a nice player, Johnson is not Brown. I don't think we need to worry, though, about him turning the camera around and glossing himself Mr. Big Pecs and dyeing his facial hair blonde. It's not that bad. In fact, he even reiterated that he does want to be there. He does. He does not want to be a disgruntled employee. Now, those are two things that Mr. Big Chest never said when he forced his way out of Pittsburgh. Johnson seems to be saying, if you don't want me, fine, just move me and let's be done with it. And the reason he's saying that, I would imagine, is that when the team signed Kareem Hunt and John Dorsey was asked if that made Johnson expendable, Dorsey said he wasn't, quote, expendable yet, end of quote. Obviously, the player is still bothered by that. And he's not sure they want to commit to him. Therefore, he doesn't want to commit to them. And of course, the media went to the quarterback, Baker Mayfield, to get his take on Johnson. Now, generally, most guys in that situation do not discuss their teammate situation. But Baker Mayfield is not most guys. He's not just your QB1. He's not just the face of that franchise. He's America's quarterback. And he made it pretty clear. Either you're with us or you're not. The train is pulling out of the station. Either you're going to be on it or you're not.
That's something that we've been dealing with for a while. If we have guys that want to be here, they'll show that. They'll voice that. Obviously, you know, he's going to handle his stuff how he wants. But you're either on this train or you're not. It's moving. You can get out the way or you can join us. So it is what it is.
That is a strong, strong statement from a young quarterback. But again, that's not your typical young quarterback. That's a dude who's putting in the work, making plays, winning games, leading from the front, and saying, we're building something here. Either you want to be a part of this or you don't. But make up your mind. And then when asked if comments like that, and again, those are really strong comments. When asked if comments like that might make for an awkward situation, again, Baker did not back down.
It's not awkward. You know, it's self-inflicted. Awkward. It is what it is. It's not awkward for anybody else in this building.
I.e., it's as awkward as he is going to make it. I'm not making this awkward. Neither is anybody else. We're here doing our work. And Mayfield hopes that Johnson will too. Quote.
He's got to do his job. He said he's a professional. I hope he does his job.
And again, when most teammates would never say something about their teammate situation, there was still even more from Baker Mayfield.
I wouldn't say I'm not happy about it. It's just the way he's handled it. And, you know, it can be a stir up in the media. It can be however it wants. But if somebody wants to be here, they'll be here in that situation. You got guys within our locker room that are dying to get playing time, that are dying to be here. And I get it. Duke's been here for years, and I respect that, but it's about what are you doing right now. The past is the past. My rookie year, I got to learn from it. I got to move forward. It's about right now and what we're going to do.
I got to tell you something. I don't know that I've ever heard a second-year quarterback handle a situation like that. I've never seen a second-year NFL quarterback handle a situation like that, and I couldn't be any more impressed. There are guys with 10 years in that league that would not have handled that situation as well as Baker Mayfield. He's doing it like a boss. Again, leading from the front, trying to keep everybody on the same page, working for the same goal. Speaking of bosses, if they went to the quarterback with it, you knew they'd go to the head coach with it too. Here's what Freddie Kitchens told NFL Network.
No disrespect to you guys, but the media creating something more than it just was just a comment. He wants to be traded, you know? I want to win the lottery. All right, so it doesn't matter. He's a Cleveland Brown. He's under contract. He's going to be used to the best of his ability and what benefits the team. And that's what we're going with. As far as the media-driven controversies, there's no controversy on our team, and that's the only ones that matter.
Man, this dude is the best. I love that. Hell yes. See, here's the thing. I'm not going to go as far as to say it's a media-driven controversy, but you certainly could cherry-pick the quotes from everybody and make it sound a lot worse than it is. I mean, you could pull Baker's quote and make it sound like he's crushing Duke, or you could see it as a guy who's making it very clear that we've got a certain way of doing things around here, and we need everybody on board. Or you can say that Duke Johnson is saying, they tried to trade me, they don't want me, so if they don't want me, I don't want them. But in the meantime, he has made it pretty clear, I'm not going to be a disgruntled employee. I'm not going to make any trouble. In other words, he's not intending to go all Antonio Brown with it and start FaceTiming with or from his cardio machine. And the coach is saying, look, the player's here. He's under contract. The only reason it's an issue is because the media is making it an issue, not us. So what I'm saying is this. Why don't we all go back to that one big rap against the Browns? You know, one that I don't accept myself. But that one big rap. Rap being, they're going to implode. They're going to rip apart with all the expectations. The expectations for a team that hasn't done jack ever are crazy. There are too many combustible personalities here. They've got a first-year head coach. They've got a second-year quarterback. There is no way they can handle the distractions, the expectations, the heat. And when these things inevitably do spring up, they'll go sideways, then they'll rip apart, then they'll implode. It's not how I see it. That is not how I see it. For a team that has not been in the spotlight, for a team that's got a young quarterback and a first-year head coach that have never dealt with this stuff before, they could not be handling it any better than they are. At this point, not only does it not feel like it's going to rip apart, I'm actually feeling even better about them than I did before because America's quarterback is handling this just fine. America's coach is handling it just fine. Hell, even America's disgruntled running back is handling it pretty well. This is why they are who they are. America's team. They've got this. Let me say this one more time to those of you who are still not with the Browns. This freaking train is pulling out. Either you're with us or you're not. Get on board or get the hell out of the way. Make up your mind, though, because seats are limited and we don't have time for anybody who does not want to be a part of this.
You're either on this train or you're not. It's moving. You can get out the way or you can join us.
Preach. Preach. America's team, man. They make everything more interesting. Tom Haberstroh is my guest. Tom, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm hurting, Jim. Hurting a little bit after last night's game. Got to be honest.
I knew it. I got to ask you about that because I had Chris Haynes on the show last week. Tom, we talked a little bit about the media jam that took place last night. This started as a Haynes tweet. It ended up as a live-streamed, sponsored event with camera crews, a jib cam, Quinn Cook on the sidelines, fans with cowbells. What was the entire experience like?
It was incredible. I mean, I think, you know, over 70,000 people watched the stream, which is about, you know, 68,000 more than I expected. It was an incredible experience. Chris Haynes from Yahoo Sports put on an amazing event. You know, they had food, they had camera crews, they had gift bags, they had, you know, logos on the court, they had the stream, they had post-game interviews. it was a real legit event. And the fact that it was like scrapped together over the last month or maybe in the last couple weeks, it was a real honor to be a part of it. And I got to say, very disappointed with our team's effort. We lost in the first round of an 8-team tournament. But you know what? We'll be back next year, Jim, better than ever.
No doubt. Summer obviously is outstanding. I love everything about summer, except for one thing. The bugs, the flies, the insects invading your home. I hate that. I hate that, but I love my pals at Dynatrap. Dynatrap is the leading manufacturer of outdoor mosquito and insect traps. And I've got great news. They have come up with a solution now for indoor pests. The Dynatrap fly light works day and night to attract and trap flies, fruit flies, mosquitoes, other pesky insects. I'm telling you, this thing works. I've got one. It works great. Forget those disgusting fly strips. The Dynatrap fly light looks like a subtle nightlight. It plugs into any indoor outlet. I've been using mine now for a while. It is insane how well it works. You can get yours at Dynatrap.com. That's DynaTrap.com. Enter the promo code Rome and get 15% off any of their products. Dynatrap, the safe, silent, and simple solution to household insect control. Dynatrap. Tom Haberstroh joining us. All right, so let me jump right into this. It is the fifth anniversary of the 2014 finals, which means it's also the fifth anniversary of Bobby Ramos going legend on Eric Spoelstra. I have always wanted to ask you about this, but you were about to ask Spoelstra a follow-up question when Bobby Ramos took an absolute sledgehammer to Spo. What do you remember about that great moment in sports history?
Look, guys, you know, I never thought I would recover from that. It wasn't just the fact that he stole the mic and stole, you know, the spotlight. It was that it was televised. And sometimes you never recover from those things being broadcast nationally. I had a follow-up question. The first question I had to Eric Spoelstra, who had a good rapport with, I wasn't combative like that Bobby Ramos, who said that the Heat got stomped. And told that to the coach, and Eric Spoelstra gave him a one-word answer, you know. It's a two-way street, the respect. You know, when you ask a question, you have to have respect you have to be professional to Eric Spoelstra. And I had a professional follow-up because I'm a grown-up, you know. I'm a grown-up. I was 25 years old, but I was still a grown-up at the time. And, you know, I asked the first question, which was, you know, Eric, in the first series against the Spurs last year, you guys got be pretty good in the game three. Is there anything you can take from that loss, compare it to this loss in game three, and turn things around like you did last year? And you know what? He gave me a good answer. But I think the next answer, the follow-up that I had, was actually going to give them the repeat. They were going to beat the Spurs if I had that follow-up question. So I'm sorry to the Miami Heat Nation. Sorry to Eric Spoelstra. If I had that follow-up question, maybe it would have unlocked a piece of strategy for Eric Spoelstra to turn around that series like they did in the previous year and win the 2014 championship. Look, I'm not saying that I would have changed the course of history with that follow-up question. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but you might have. You might have, Tom. Tom Haberstroh joining us. You might have. All right, so thanks for sharing your thoughts on that. The Warriors announced that Kevin Durant's not going to go tonight. Klay Thompson's questionable. Tom, if you're Steve Kerr, how do you go about evaluating the risk-reward proposition of playing Klay tonight versus resting him?
It's a great question. You know, at the practice yesterday, the media was able to watch them get shots up, and I noticed that Bob Myers, the GM, Steve Kerr, the head coach, sat down with Klay Thompson on the side of the court having a talk with him, and it seemed pretty serious, and it didn't seem like Klay was very happy. And I think what the conversation was, just reading the tea leaves there, was probably a hard conversation about, hey, you know, this is about the rest of the series. It's not about game three. This is probably going long, and we want you to be healthy for as much as we possibly can for the rest of the series. And I think, you know, Klay went out there, got some shots up, and he talked to the media afterwards, and he seemed determined to play in game three, but with the caveat that the medical team had said, we want you healthy for game four, five, six, and seven if it goes long, not just for game three. It doesn't make sense to hurt yourself in game three, go out there too early, and aggravate the injury and be out for the rest of the series. So I think that's the mentality going into this game, is they have the long term in mind. Is they want him to be healthy and able for 4, 5, 6, and 7 rather than game 3. So I would be surprised if he was cleared for game 3 simply because of what he said the medical staff was giving him guidance on ahead of that shoot-around yesterday at practice.
Tom Haberstroh is my guest. Now, speaking of the medical staff, obviously they're doing whatever they can to get Andre Iguodala ready. You've made the point that if Shane Battier was the no-stats all-star, then Iguodala is the no-stats Hall of Famer. This is a huge Iguodala house right here. I would argue he's a Hall of Famer as well. But for those who do not understand, how is a guy who averages less than 10-5-5 in the playoffs so critical to this Golden State team?
You know, I asked Bob Myers this question is, would you rather have a player who scored 20 points a game but played zero defensively and hurt you defensively? Or would you rather have a guy who's averaging 10 points a game and limiting the best score on the other team by 10 points difference? And he said, no doubt in my mind, I want the two-way player who's able to defend the opposing best player and limit him and cut the head off the snake rather than getting the guy who averages 20 points a game. Because, you know, I talked to Channing Frye for the story, too, and he's like, honestly, getting points in this league is easy. It's not hard. It's doing the other things, not to be exploited as a passer, as a defender, as a dribbler. That's really hard to become a really good NBA player. Andre Iguodala can score. That's not the issue. He's just an unbelievable defender, one of the best defenders from the perimeter position that we've seen in this generation. Guarding LeBron James in the finals, guarding Kevin Durant in 2016, and ending that series when he got promoted in the starting lineup, guarding James Harden and shutting him down, guarding Damian Lillard in closing moments in that series in the Western Conference Finals, guarding Chris Paul. How many guys in the league can honestly say they have guarded Kevin Durant, who's 7 feet tall, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, and LeBron James? The list is very short. I think it might be one name long, and that's Andre Iguodala, who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
All right, so Tom, what about tonight? Ultimately, how do you see this game playing out?
I expect a really hard-fought game, but they need the Warriors need absolutely Quinn Cook, Alphonso McKinney, all to step up. All the role players, strength in numbers is their motto. I think the Raptors are going to be very hungry. Pascal Siakam, I think, is going to come out with tons of energy. And Steph Curry, you know, he's averaged 25 and 5 and 5. You know, it's 5 points, 5 rebounds. 25 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists in his Finals career. Only two other players, Michael Jordan and LeBron James, have averaged that in the finals. He's got to step up big time in Game 3 because if Klay Thompson and KD can't go, they're going to try to do everything they can to limit Steph Curry, and I think he has to be assertive and try to go for 40 tonight.
He is an NBC Sports NBA insider, host of the Haberstroh podcast, creator of the ALS Pepper Challenge, frequent contributor, and a good friend of the program. Tom, thanks so much. Have a great night. Always good to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jake Odorizzi is my guest. Jake, it's nice to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be on here.
You too, Jake. Great to have you. So you had another really good outing on Sunday. You went those 6 shutout innings. You struck out 9 on the road against Tampa Bay. Given that you played there from 13 to 2017, is it just another game, or maybe is there a little something extra when you have a performance like that against your old team?
Yeah, I'd say there's a little something extra going into it. I mean, I'm human. It's just the nature of going back to a place where you played for so many years, comfortable, still live there in the wintertime. So got to live in my house for a couple nights. And, it was more excitement than, you know, fueled by animosity or anger. You know, they treated me great while I was there. But, you definitely want to go back and perform well at a place that you know very well.
That makes sense. All right, so you threw 7 shutout innings against the Astros back in April, and you said, quote, stuff-wise, this is the best I've consistently thrown, regardless of results, and now the results are starting to match up with the stuff, end quote. What about stuff? I mean, is stuff either there or not there? Can you conjure it up or dial it up? What about that stuff? Why do you think it's back?
I did a different program this winter with a gentleman in Plant City, which is right next to Tampa, so I would go visit Randy Sullivan over at the Florida Baseball Ranch, and we worked on getting mechanics back in order, and mechanics are the biggest thing for a pitcher, and once you don't have to worry about mechanics, stuff seems to play up, and when you've been pitching with bad mechanics, you're fighting yourself. When you stop fighting yourself, everything comes back just pure and feels good again, and that's exactly how things have been going this year, and just want to keep riding this wave as long as the season goes on. But, you know, I feel fantastic and just happy that I go out and give our team a good chance to win every time because we got a pretty special bunch up here this year.
Jake Odorizzi joining us. You know, Jake, I wonder mechanically, that's obviously a big part of it. What about your physical issues? Like, you dealt with a few back issues early in your career, but the story goes you put a lot of time into developing core strength. How big of a difference did that make, and how important was it to you making 32 starts last season?
Yeah, I mean, core strength takes away back pressure, and that's pretty much what I had, this low back issues. I got to the point of it was more of a felt like I was just one solid piece instead of, you know, pitching. You want to be separate lower half from upper half, so just more rotational, couldn't just fight it. And then what I did this offseason to change that was do some mobility, some kinetic chain work that now that I can get my front side down, I keep my upper half back, so it becomes this rubber band effect, and I'm being able to supply as much tension to it and then letting it all go towards home as opposed to being rotational. So I think the core strength is a good add-on to having that flexibility now that I can generate all that force going in one direction as opposed to being a rotational figure.
Now, in terms of the big picture, you had said publicly as far back in April that you felt like this team might be special. What did you see in this team that made you feel that way?
You know, it's a good culmination of guys that they went out and got this wintertime. You know, Jonathan Stoll was coming off of a down year, and I was coming off of a down year this previous year. CJ Cron was let go after hitting 30 pumps. Just a lot of guys that I know the fuel it gave me this winter to get back to where I wanted to be at, and I know there's a lot of guys that we had just gotten that were feeling the same way. So the effort that they put in, I was sure, was, you know, they want to do their best this year, new team, and everybody's come out and played phenomenally. The guys that have been here, you know, it's been fun to watch these guys, and obviously the home runs are fantastic. You know, we're on a record pace for all of that, but it's just that confidence now that comes into the clubhouse. You know, we expect to be in and win every game that we play now, and it's a fun environment to come to every day when you have a team like that and, you know, putting up good results.
You know, Jake, when you talk about the offense has been explosive. You got the best offense in baseball at the moment. As well as you've been pitching this year, how valuable is it to know that if you happen to make a mistake, you know you've got an offense that can pick you up and erase it pretty quickly?
That's exactly it. I told a few of our pitchers, bullpen guys, starters, that, you know, even if we give them a couple runs, we're still in any game. We just have to keep the deficit where it's at because these guys are capable of putting up 4, 5, 6 runs in an inning just like that. So when you have home run hitters like that, you're never out of a game. So if we're behind, we need to keep it exactly where it's at so we can give those guys a chance to, you know, put some runs on the board, get us back into it. And they've done that a few times this year. So it's been good for everybody. Just like I said, the confidence is what's driving everything. You know, when you got confidence, makes everything go a whole lot smoother, and that's the way we're going right now.
Jake Odorizzi joining us. You know, when you talk about the confidence, obviously a lot of that comes when you're winning. Things are great. The chemistry is great. The vibe is great. But then you've got a manager in Rocco Baldelli. You know a little bit about him from your time in Tampa. What do you remember about him there, and then what was your reaction when you heard that he was the new manager in Minnesota?
Yeah, so my time with Rocco, I got to see him do a whole bunch of different jobs. He was in the front office when I first was in Tampa, transitioned to our first base coach, outfield coach. Everything that he did at a very high level. And I wasn't, you know, I knew he was going to be a good manager. And just by seeing him in spring training, the way he took the approach of letting, you know, our coaches coach, as in our pitching coach, our hitting coach, and doing all their type of individual things while overseeing it all, I think that was a big statement for a lot of guys. He wasn't coming in to try to put his stamp on anything, wanted to do things his way. We did some new stuff that was different for a lot of guys, but he did a phenomenal job of overseeing everything and really building those relationships early on. But, you know, Rocco's a stud. I mean, he's, like I said, he's done everything that I've seen him do phenomenally. And this is no surprise to me and probably a lot of people that know Rocco that he's just, you know, transitioned into a great manager.
It's a really good answer. Go back to that point about relationships. I mean, he's young. And in fact, he's not just young. He's younger, for instance, than Nelson Cruz. How valuable is it then to have a manager who connects with players, develops relationships, as you point out, and knows what you guys are going through and dealing with?
Just the relatability. You know, he's been in our position. I mean, sure, him and Nelson have played against each other. You know, that's got to be something that a lot of coaches can't say, that they played against a lot of their, you know, a few of their players. But he's very accountable. He holds himself in pretty high standards, but he also knows how difficult this game is. And I think, you know, even when we lose a game, you know, the first game in Tampa, we got, you know, a pretty good shellacking. And the next day it was like, all right, we'll get back at it. We'll get right back at it tomorrow. Sure enough, one of the next three games, there's no panic in him. He's very calm, collected. But like I said, he realizes how tough this game is and knows the ins and outs of giving the guy an extra day off or having a late show up to the field just to give guys that extra bit of rest that they may need. So he's very cognizant of what guys need to perform well.
Now, Jake, you are a big Tampa Bay Lightning fan. It's been a few weeks now. They were knocked out in the first round. Are you over this yet? And can you explain what happened to them?
I am over it. Yeah. I can, you know, being in a professional sport, I think, you know, bad streaks happen. It's nature of the business. It happened at the worst time. The best way, you know, I heard it described was they're the best team on the planet for 6 months. They were the worst for 6 days. Those 6 days happened to be the first round of the playoffs. But, you know, for me, from my viewing point, I think what had happened was they probably played the worst team that they could have played to open up the playoffs, because they were playing playoff hockey in Columbus 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the season ended, just to make the whole thing. So, and I think they had a great game plan going in against Tampa. They clogged them up between the blue lines, and I think anybody who knows the NHL knows the speed and the skill that the Lightning have. But if you can't get it going and going in the right direction, it's kind of tough to get in your game plan. So I think they did a really good job of disrupting what the Lightning were trying to do. And then I think the frustration started to set in, started to press a little too much. And, you know, the rest is what it is, but they'll still have a really good team next year. You know, I know a few of the guys on the team, and I think they're ready to get back at it and kind of flush this season away.
Jake, you broke that down like a boss. I talk a lot of hockey on this show. I talk to all the best analysts in the game. I would put that analysis right up there with any we've had this season. You broke that thing down like a boss. You should be proud of yourself. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I got a 3.5-year-old who actually loves the Lightning, so he didn't quite understand that they weren't going to be playing hockey after they lost their series. He kept asking me every day if they were playing tonight. So had to break the news to him, but I kept having to do it because he didn't quite understand how playoff hockey works quite yet.
That's what it is. It's playoff hockey. It's also a game of matchups. And, you know, it is a crapshoot to a certain extent. You never really know. Minnesota's up 10.5 games in the AL Central. Jake Odorizzi, one of the big reasons for that. 8-2, an ERA of under 2, 70 strikeouts. Jake, really nicely done. Great to have you on the show, and thanks so much for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you having me on, and hope you have a great rest of the day.
Listen, do not take a chance on getting stranded. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Get your battery tested. It is free of charge and one of the many services available there. If your battery does need to be replaced, the professional parts people will help you find the exact battery for your car or your truck. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices. Every day, O'Reilly Auto Parts. Cowboy Cerrone is my guest. Cowboy, what's going on? Good to have you. How are you?
I'm doing well. How you guys doing?
Good, man. Good. So you're a few days away from fighting Tony Ferguson Saturday night in Chicago. Normally, I would ask a fighter on a Wednesday of fight week how camp has been going, but you fought barely a month ago. So did you even break camp?
Nah, I mean, I was in Mexico when they called, so I had to put down the guacamole and beer and get back to work, didn't I?
Hey, Cowboy, lay that out for me. That's kind of funny because you won in Ottawa on May 4th. You turn around, you come right back to fight this weekend, and you touched on that story, but you were in Mexico, so you were there, and then you got that call about fighting UFC 238. When you got the call, what did you think? How did that call go?
Yeah, I mean, I was there for like 12 days. I was down there cave diving, and they called. They asked me if I would do it, and I was like, yes. And then a day went by. 2 days in Brian, I called back like, hey, man, is this, like, happening? Because sometimes they just, like, put feelers out to make sure if you want to do it, you know? And then the other camp has to agree on it. It's not like just a yes answer. It kind of takes a couple days. I don't know what Tony was doing, but, like, 2 days went by. I'm like, look, man, you guys got to let me know. Like, I'm on vacation. Like, do I keep drinking beer and having a good time, or do I need to start running? You know what I'm saying? So that's what we had to get done.
Cowboy Cerrone joining us. No, I could see that dilemma, right? So you're out there like, hey, man, can I slam a few beers and have some guac, or should I be in training? Like, what do you think Ferguson's deal was? What took him that time to figure out whether or not he wanted to do it? What was going through his head?
Oh, well, I think he's worried I'm a dangerous opponent. He's come off a good victory, and he wants to wait because he's in line for a title. So for him stepping down, fighting for another title eliminator is kind of dangerous for him, you know what I mean? So I think his camp and them had to decide on it, and couldn't figure it out. I don't know what was going through his head. No idea.
Cowboy Cerrone joining us. Let me ask you this. Like, what was going through your head? Like, a lot of other guys in your situation who just fought, who were already on vacation, would have said, hey, you know what? No thanks. I'm good. I'll fight next time. Why did you say yes?
That's what I do. I can't be the guy who'll fight anyone anywhere. And then when it comes to him, be like, ooh, except for him.
So that's a no-brainer for you, right?
Yeah, no-brainer at all.
All right, so then when it comes to Ferguson, I think that maybe part of that was also he saw what happened to your last opponent, Ally Quinta. Ally Quinta was talking about, he went on with Ariel Helwani last week, and Helwani said, how you doing? How'd you come out of that fight? He said, quote, I broke my nose. I fractured my orbital bone. I had some deep bruising on my legs because of those kicks. It was brutal. I'm finally starting to move around, but it took its toll. He beat the bleep out of me the way a veteran gets it done. He's good, man. He's good. So my question to you is, what's it mean to earn that level of respect from an opponent after beating the bleep out of him and hearing him say that about you?
It's cool, man. I just saw him yesterday and asked him how he's doing championships. He's doing good, healing up, but... Man, I'm just coming into my prime, baby. I feel good. Ready to get this belt, man. It's time.
Cowboy, what is that? Like, explain for those who don't really know that you saw him and you're like, how you doing, champ? What's up? I mean, you beat the hell out of this guy, but there's a fundamental respect among gladiators. Can you break that down for those that have never done it? What is that fundamental respect among gladiators like? How does that work?
There's definitely a fundamental respect going around, but not everyone has it. Like, I could walk up to Tony right now and just shake his hand, go eat lunch with him. Like, it doesn't matter to me. Like, I don't have like extra beef or hate somebody. So a lot of these guys do. But Ally Quinta was cool. He was cordial the whole time. So he's, in my opinion, he's a good dude. You know what I mean?
But not everybody's like that. It's funny. It's like the respect is there for a lot of guys, but not everybody, right?
Definitely not. Yep.
All right. So in terms of the belt, like, I ran down your introduction. So you've got a list of UFC records. It's really impressive. It's an all-time great career. What would it mean to add a belt to that resume?
Oh, that's the final task in my legacy, man. Go get the belt, keep the belt, and jump off on top.
So what do? If you get that belt, do you defend that belt, or do you walk off on that belt? How would you approach the belt if you get the belt?
No, I'll defend it for years, man. I plan on keeping it and defending it for a long time and then bowing out on top.
Cowboy Cerrone joining us. Fight's coming up this weekend. So when you look at Ferguson, what kind of a fighter do you see?
And he's real unorthodox. He throws a bunch of crazy stuff, and he's more tough and, like, outlandish. Like, he just throws crazy combinations that come to his mind, you know? So, you know, his chin's pretty questionable. I think his ground game's questionable. But, yeah, plan on, he's going to try and come hard. I'm going to meet him in the middle and throw down.
You know, again, man, this is not an easy fight for you. None of them are, but this one especially, on short notice, you come off the beach. But, like, to your point, I can't be that guy who will fight anybody anywhere but not fight this guy. I mean, is the approach essentially, if I want the belt, I have to beat everybody anyway, so what does it matter where or when I fight them? Is that pretty much what it is?
Yeah, I think anyways, I'll fight anybody. It doesn't matter. When they call me with a palm star, I always say yes. I've never been the guy to say no ever, so it doesn't matter to me.
Now listen, part of the reason I've been looking forward to talk to you is that you're at your home at BMF Ranch, and you've got some great horses like Jethro and Gasher. It's clear watching you talk about the horses how much you love the animal. How did you first get involved with horses?
I met a girl when I grew up with money, man. I don't have like a sad, oh, my dad beat me and left me story, you know. I grew up wealthy, and I met a girl in high school whose dad lived out in the country. I moved out there with him and just fell in love with the cowboy lifestyle and just, like, wanted to become a cowboy and started riding bulls. And so that was, like, freshman year. And ever since then, I just loved that lifestyle, loved the animals, and now I got a ranch and every animal you could think of.
Now, you recently bought another horse, a young one for your son, Danger, so you can grow up together, so they can grow up together. What's the new horse like, and how much are you looking forward to watching them grow up together?
Yeah, he's at the trainer right now, actually, getting his obedience down. So it's hard for me to do while I'm training outside to send him off to get him trained. But he's a very expensive, true bloodline horse, and he's going to be great, man. Real cool demeanor. It's going to be awesome.
BMF Ranch is like an amazing place. All right, it's got a paintball field. It's got plenty of room for the horses. It's got more. What was the ranch like when you first got there?
Just land. It was nothing. A little trailer on it and a bunch of land. We built everything by our hands. pretty cool.
Hey, Cowboy, really quick before you go, is a lot of people know your grandparents play a huge part in your story. You and I could spend the entire conversation talking about them. But for those who are not familiar, how much did they mean to you when you were growing up?
Oh, they're like my mom and dad for sure. That's they raised me when I was a kid and took me in and taught me the ways, man. So my grandfather passed away in my very first UFC fight as I was walking out, and my grandma's been to everyone ever since. So she'll be here tomorrow, and I'm excited, man.
So how'd you first get into kickboxing and MMA? How did that start?
A buddy of mine was kickboxing at the time. He's like, hey, man, you think you're pretty tough. Why don't you come down and try this? And I took a fight 2 weeks later.
How'd that go?
I won. Yeah, I won. 28-0 as a kickboxer.
Yeah, but you know what that meant, man. That meant that you had to give up your dream to be a magician. Back in the day, you were a magician.
Yeah.
What were you like as a magician? What kind of tricks?
Everything, man. I used to love it. Nothing on like Vegas scale, but just more like kiddie scale, you know, sleight of hand, street magic stuff. But it was fun. I could still do it.
17 wins by submission, 10 by knockout, most wins in UFC history. UFC 238 from Chicago, 10 p.m. Eastern, live on pay-per-view. Cowboy Cerrone, my guest. Cowboy, been wanting to do that for a long time. Great to have you on the show, man. Good luck. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Alvin, take us back to the 3 days that were.
Are you ready? We're just ready, man. We're f***ing ready.
Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome.
Jim Rome.
Hope you had an amazing weekend. Hope your week's off to a good start. It's going to be a great week. There's a lot going on in sports. There's a lot going on within the program itself. It's going to be a good Jungle Monday. Let me start with last night's matchup in Toronto. This is why you don't bury the Warriors before they're dead, because of what they just did in last night's 109-104 win over Toronto.
Goes to Andre. He's open. Uh-oh. Launches a three. Buried it!
Andre Iguodala, if you need him.
Clutch.
Man, those aren't stones.
Balls.
Those are freaking church bells. Maybe you don't leave that guy that wide ass open in that situation, or that is going to happen.
Email.
Do you think the zero on Boogie's jersey symbolizes a donut?
Hey, fat boy, I got some donuts for you.
Hey, listen, I'm not going to say that we didn't play that soundbite.
Krispy Kreme, fat boy.
What I'm saying to you, respect the big man.
Whatever he needed from me, I was okay with it.
They don't win if he doesn't play like that.
Self-absorbed mother scratcher.
I think he wants out. That's it. He says that's it.
You want to call him flabby? You better not. You want to call him fat? You better not. Call this guy champ.
First Mexican heavyweight champion of the world.
Hell yes you are. What do you know? It's Mannix joining us for a few more moments. I love the story, but how big of a loss is that for the sport of boxing overall?
It's bitterly disappointing that we're not going to get Joshua Wilder. I think it creates even more excitement for Joshua's next fight against Ruiz in the fall.
Here's the deal, fellas. It's a paid holiday, but you got to attend the smack off. I got Rick in Buffalo.
Hey, scumbags! It's me and the B.I.C.
My worthless, lazy husband calling your show. He can barely take out the trash and put food on the table.
Ah. Eric Hosmer.
Some of these guys that have light tower power, and, you know, there's about five of those guys that are just in a different class when it comes to power in the league. And Framil and Renfro as well are in that class.
This fight doesn't spill into the streets. This fight is in the ring. You started it, and I'm ending it. June 21st. There will be nothing left of your body except vaporized rubber.
Take the mothership back to Roswell, dumbass.
Dumbass.
There's a sheep for you waiting next to Planet Eisenhower in the control room on the Jim Rome Show.
Pierre Maguire joining us here in the jungle. How much of that is about what Boston is doing to him and forcing him to move side to side?
Oh, man, I'm so happy to hear you say that, Jim. You nailed it. Binnington's going to have to find a way to tighten himself up when he moves from side to side.
And he took a shot that's blocked by Jaron. He's hurt. And he's had the puck come up. It looks like it hit him in the face.
Right, my bad.
It looks like he may have been hit in the face. What was your first clue? He went down like he got hit with a bazooka blast. That he was pouring blood from his face. The biggest head in the world.
When JK is a passenger in a car, the driver has to ask him, we good? Right before driving under an overpass.
A legend was born 40 years ago. Today. Happy birthday, head. Wish him a happy birthday. Compliment him on the circumference of his head. Go right ahead. Bill Brinson joining us. Gerald McCoy signing with the Carolina Panthers.
I like the move by Carolina. This is a franchise from the quarterback to the coach to the GM that knows that they're all in 2019 if they want to keep their jobs.
I want to hear from somebody who has a firm knowledge of cryptocurrency. I don't. Do you?
Are you?
It's good to have you, Dave. How are you?
Some advice for coin collecting.
Don't buy any cleaned coins. Do you want to write it down?
Why do I not want clean coins?
Do you want to get your coins graded?
Are you and I talking the same language? Are we talking about the same sport?
I'm talking about coin collecting. I'm not talking about any Bitcoin. I don't understand computers. Okay. Is that helpful?
Is that helpful? No, that's not helpful.
Moore's going to come home, and the catcher, Narvaez, was not at home playing.
What are you going to do if the ball is hit to you?
Wow.
Dude, you do know that the umpire was not wearing a glove. What, was he going to try and throw to first to get a double play? We are talking to John Morosi for a few more moments.
Well, Jim, it was a classic metaphorical Scott Boras quote. The wine has to decant, end quote.
You know how demoralizing it must have been for those other two nerds?
Geniuses.
Austin Meadows is my guest.
My parents, they realize how hard this game can be. They're there for the support. You know, they're there for the positive uplifting.
He really is the guy, you know, gives no right? He just doesn't. I like Drake. I got kids that love Drake and all that stuff. But I love him going at Drake. Oh, man.
The hell are you talking about, Rome? It's not Friday. It is for me. Tom Haberstroh joining us. You were about to ask Spoelstra a follow-up question when Bobby Ramos took an absolute sledgehammer to Spo.
Coach.
Look, guys, it was televised, and sometimes you never recover from those things.
I'm not talking about that kind of junk.
Penis with a man hanging from it.
I'm not talking about coffee cans or three legs of Cowboy Cerrone. You fought barely a month ago, so did you even break camp?
Nah, I mean, I was in Mexico when they called. I had to put down the guacamole and beer and back to work, didn't I?
I do declare.
Business is business.
Hey,
business is business.
Cordon Bleu.
Nobody home.
Enjoy it for a little bit.
Do you think we should go to commercial?
You're the best to ever do it. You smell me?
See you at the Bay, Aubrey.
See you at the party, Richter.
My guy.
Hope you have a great rest of the day,
because I'm getting the bread.
Good night.
Let's go to Oakland. Deech. My man, Deech. What's going on? How are you?
Romy, what's happening, partner?
What's up, partner?
Romy, when the name Jim Rome's 25th annual Smack Off Watch Party is on the Fort Greene marquee, business is about to pick up. Romy, of course we're running this thing back this year, man. Last year was awesome, dude. We had a ball. First of all, Romy, let me tell the clones where it's at. 8th and Washington, Old Oakland, Fort Greene is the bar. Doors around 8:45. Romy, you've been talking a lot about what the Smack-Off watch party or what a Smack-Off looks and feels like. I want to tell you and set the scene for the clones what a watch party kind of looks and feels like.
Do it.
So, first of all, last year, Romy, I walk into my own bar, and I'm not going to lie, it kind of felt like Luke Skywalker when he walked into that cantina on Tatooine in the epic movie Star Wars, Romy. The bar's filled up with a ton of morally bankrupt clones, just absolutely destroying pints of IPA and donuts. The Golden Bake Warriors in the corner puffing on a hookah. My guy Jack in Frisco so blasted he looks like he sprayed himself in the face with a can of mace. And over in the end of the bar, sipping on a gin and tonic, is the Miano band. Parody Lawrence belting out Robert Goulet resets. Romy, it's a banana scene, man. You better come strong, sobriety, because you'll ass in a war. Oh, Romy, speaking of which, Oakland Rob, that Oakland Rob was in the house last year. He was trying to get me to let him bartend to serve up the TB12 cocktail special, man. It's a scene, Romy. It's out there. So, War Parody Lawrence getting a golden ticket this year so we can go all wangs with it. Believe it or not, Parody Larry loves the pressure of a crowd. War, you sending James Kelly up to Oakland to give us a little satellite coverage. We all want to play shuffleboard on his gigantic dome. And War, Jeff and Richmond getting on air this year to take a second shot or a shot at his second green jacket so it can live in his walk-in size. I'm sorry, Romy. I'm flaming. I'm out.
Deech, my man. Rack him. Mike in Indy. Mikey, what's up?
Hey, not much, Jim. Yeah, I appreciate the player profile yesterday, and you know, I hate to take the shine from Leffen Laguna on his big day, but not really. I actually enjoy that. But first of all, Jim, this might be the most scared bunch of golden ticket callers we've ever had. Shaking in their boots, thinking about taking that long, lonely ride in the Smacky Choppa. If you're scared now, you're going to be scared on the big day, and Rome has a right to not let you on the air. You wimps better pick up the phones. And a quick update on my $5,001 offer to be my tandem partner in the Smack-Off. I have two known jungle names with serious interest and one guy nobody knows about. I'm optimistic, but until the deal is done, it's still up in the air whether I'll be calling. Someone needs to step up and be a hero, because it would be a damn shame if I didn't participate in the 25th anniversary smack-off. Be a hero and enjoy a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be a major part of radio history. Now, there's been some confusion as to whether we would split the $5,000 cash prize after we win. Now, when I tell you this is a pure cash grab, what part of cash grab do you guys not understand? I'm giving you a priceless opportunity for only $5,001. Don't get greedy now trying to split the winnings. Come on now. That's why they call me the toaster, because I'm getting the bread.
Rack him. All right, Mikey. Don't get greedy now.
Good night now.